20th of January 2023, and we're here at the Gold Coast, at the Bhakti Center, and we're going to do Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 7. Cool. I can't remember if I've ever spoken on this verse. Dvitiyam tu bhavayasha. That was pretty good. I'll do it more slowly. It's 1, 3, 7. Dvitiyam tu bhavayasha. Rasatala gatam mahim. Udarishyanupadata Yagnesha Sokaram Vapu Dvitiyam, the second, two, but Bhavaya, for the welfare Asya, of this earth, Rasatala, of the lowest region, Gatam, having gone, Mahim, the earth, Udarishan, lifting, Upadata, established, Yagneshaha, the proprietor or the supreme enjoyer, Sokaram, Hagish, Vapuhu, incarnation. Of course, Vapuhu literally means form. So, Sokaran Vapu means the form of a hog. Srila Prabhupada's translation, the supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices accepted the incarnation of a boar, the second incarnation, and for the welfare of the earth, he lifted the earth from the nether regions of the universe. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The indication is that for each and every incarnation of the personality of Godhead, the particular function executed is also mentioned. There cannot be any incarnation without a particular function, and such functions are always extraordinary. They are impossible for any living being to perform. The incarnation of the boar was to take the earth out of Pluto's region of filthy matter. It's interesting that Prabhupada calls it Pluto's region. Right? What is that a reference to? Yeah, but why is Prabhupada calling it Pluto's region?
It's further away.
Huh? Well, no, it has nothing to do with the planet Pluto.
It doesn't exist now.
Okay, I'll let you all think about that. We'll pick that up again. Picking up something from a filthy place is done by a boar. And the all-powerful personality of Godhead displayed this wonder to the Asuras, who had hidden the earth in such a filthy place. There is nothing impossible for the personality of Godhead, and although he played the part of a boar, by the devotees he is worshipped, staying always in transcendence. Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya rasatala gatam mahim udarishyanupadata yagnesha sokaram vapu. The supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices accepted the incarnation of a boar, the second incarnation, and for the welfare of the earth he lifted the earth from the nether regions of the universe. So we have here these descriptions of the wonderful avatars of the Lord. So all over the world, most people, the majority of people, believe that there's a God. If you poll people, way over 50% will say, I believe in God. But if you ask them what is the nature of God, they cannot give you much information, correct? He's very great. He's the creator. He's the father. We had this one Muslim guide when we were taking a tour of a mosque in Bahrain. And she actually said, Allah is the most beautiful. And I said, oh, I got very excited. I said, can you tell me a little more about that? And then she got really flustered. And she said, well, there's so much beauty in the world. He's the source of all beauty. She kind of backtracked a little, that he couldn't be the most beautiful. And, you know, what does God look like? What does he do? Where does he live? This is not known. She was also telling us that God can't come to this earth. She said he just can't, he can't come. There's no avatar, as she said. And I'm like, well, why not? Isn't he all powerful? Now, I would imagine, any of you are familiar with Islam, and you know, what kind of meat do they not eat? Boar. And it's so extreme that in some Muslim countries, they won't even allow the word pig to be in a book. Like, they'll go through the children's books and they'll take out all the words that say pig. That they can't even talk about pigs. So if you went to them and said, God is in Sukhararupa, or here, Sokaram Vapu, he has the form of a boar, he has the form of a pig, they would be completely scandalized. They would be horrified. Then they'd really want to burn down all of our Hindu temples, you know. Send these terrible people saying that God can have the form of a pig. Just like I was told in Africa, they had to change the cover of the painting on the Ishopanishad because it shows Anantasesha behind the Lord, and that in Africa, anyone who worships snakes, it's considered like some voodoo thing. You know, we wouldn't be able to sell any books. So this idea, right, that the Lord Anantasesha, this is a form of Balaram, that the Lord appears in the form of a snake. I was just reading in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how Ananta has, you know, unlimited heads and also unlimited hands and feet. And I was thinking, well, that's kind of interesting for a snake. I thought, is that more like a lizard, you know, than a snake? But we have the Krishna says, Aham Bija Pratapita, I am the father of all living entities. And actually, he has Advaita Machyuta Manadim Ananta Rupam. Ananta means unlimited, Rupa means form. So he has, you can say that his form is unlimited, just like when his mother tries to bind him up because he stole butter. And she kept adding more rope, and although he had a little belt on his waist, she couldn't tie a rope around his waist, so his form is unlimited. But also he has unlimited forms. And whatever forms exist in his creation, he has some form like that. Actually, I was recently reading where Prabhupada said that even the devotees, the great souls, appear in all species of life. Imagine that. There's some deer preacher. You know, there's some bird preacher. And Prabhupada said even below animal life. I don't know, is there a tree preacher? Seems inconceivable. How can Mahatmas appear in all these different forms and Krishna appear in all these different forms? Of course, the Buddhists, they have some branch of Buddhism. They have a tradition that Buddha has appeared in many, many, many forms, even among animal forms, in order to preach to the animals. But this whole pastime is absolutely amazing. As the God appears in the form of a boar, and not only in the form of a boar, but first it's a little tiny boar, and then it becomes as big as the whole sky. And that within the bottom half of the universe, there's water. There's the Garbhodakashai ocean. And the earth had fallen out of orbit into this ocean. I guess that's one way of being flooded, yeah? I mean, there was a flood with Matsya Avatar. Here's another kind of flood. The earth is thrown into the ocean. And the Lord comes as a boar, as Prabhupada says here. He says many times. Because that's what pigs are good at. They're good at going into dirty places and finding things. There are certain kinds of edibles that they use boars to find them. These things called truffles. And they use boars to smell out the truffles and then to dig in the earth and find out a truffle. So it's like, okay, I need to find the earth and the water. Now, it interests me that it says a filthy place, because the Garbhodak ocean is actually from the perspiration of the Lord. So it's transcendent water. It's not, technically speaking, a filthy place. But still the Lord is thinking, okay, I have to rescue the earth from the water, so let me take this form as a pig. And it's enjoyable to him. It's pleasure for him. Like, I've often thought about how Krishna appears as a little child. Why would the most powerful being want to appear as a little human child? We think of children as being particularly helpless. But it's also fun. You just get to play all day. You don't have any responsibilities. So he takes all these different forms for enjoyment. And this is something which generally isn't understood in the world, which is why most religions today are highly impersonal. That God is just some energetic force that somehow creates all the variety in the world that has no form and no personality. And yet we're saying he has infinite forms. But again, this is a difficult thing to explain to people in general. All right, now one other thing that jumps out at me here is that Srila Prabhupada talked about taking the earth out of Pluto's region of filthy matter. So this is a reference to Greek mythology, that Pluto was associated basically with Yamaraj and with being at the bottom of the universe, dealing with sinful people in some hellish situation. And I find this interesting because I ran a Gurukul for many years, and Srila Prabhupada said that our children should know some of the classics that are recognized in society. Now, it was also interesting to me that none of you knew, which tells me that probably none of you studied Greek or Roman mythology in school. Did any of you read the Iliad or the Odyssey? So when I was growing up, everybody had to read the Iliad and the Odyssey. And Srila Prabhupada makes reference, especially to the Odyssey, several times in his lectures. And sometimes he makes just a brief allusion, A-L-L-U-S-I-O-N, not I-L-L. Sometimes he makes a brief allusion, which means that he's assuming that everyone in his audience is familiar with what he's talking about. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada, in his lectures or his morning walks, would quote Shakespeare. There was one morning walk he took where the whole morning walk, all he did was give the whole story of The Merchant of Venice. He basically just told the whole story from beginning to end. Satsuki Maharaj writes about this. And Prabhupada would talk about Sankirtan, quoting from Merchant of Venice. Any of you familiar with Merchant of Venice? They don't so much teach that anymore in school because it would be considered anti-Semitic. But Prabhupada was talking about Sankirtan, and he was quoting, "The quality of mercy is not strained. It falleth like a gentle rain from heaven. It's twice blessed. It blesses those who give and those who receive." So that is Shakespeare's line right out of The Merchant of Venice. So I also think it's very important here that Srila Prabhupada would use what we might consider mundane sources in order to make various spiritual points. I think this is important for several reasons. First of all, he wanted us to be materially educated people. Like in Ishopanishads, it said that one should know both ignorance and knowledge side by side. One should know the transcendence and the temporary side by side. He didn't want us to be fools. Of course, there's that statement, one should remain a fool in front of guru. But that doesn't mean that you're literally a fool. Like one time a devotee wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada and signed it, "Your eternally useless servant." Why would you want an eternally useless servant? So we are being of much more service to the Lord if we're competent in some way, if we have some expertise in something. Actually, one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is daksha, to be expert. And when Prabhupada talked about Gurukula, and he was talking also about the Brahmachari ashram, Prabhupada said, "All glories to the assembled devotees includes the children." So unless the children are screaming, they are welcome. And Prabhupada said there that in the Gurukula, in the Brahmacharis, he said they should not be callous toward material knowledge, just thinking, "Well, I'm a Vaishnava, I shouldn't know anything of the world." He said in the training in the Gurukula and for the Brahmacharis should be that they know something of everything and everything of something. And tonight we're going to be talking about career dharma, which is the Varna part of Varnashram. How do we find our ideal career? How do we do our ideal career in a way that is transcendental, that is spiritual? How do we erase this distinction between our spiritual practice and our work in the world, so that our work in the world becomes an extension of our spiritual practice, that our work is helping our spiritual practice and our spiritual practice is helping our work? How do we have a complete system in the world, an economic and social system in the world that is intrinsically spiritual. And part of this means that we know something of everything and everything of something. Now, there are times when Srila Prabhupada, using some knowledge in the world to explain a point, ended up, being misunderstood or leading to something that Srila Prabhupada was criticized for. Yes? Like if we want to make a point to people that you should be a vegetarian, we may quote from some medical study about how meat eating is bad for your health or bad for the planet, knowing full well that in 10 years from now, there may be a different medical study, and the medical study we quoted from may no longer be accepted as factual. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada, in trying to explain an ideal social system, would quote from sources like some professor he heard from when he went to college, or some outside source, knowing that it was a fallible source, and that had since been discredited. And people would say, well, why is Srila Prabhupada doing this? Because he's trying to give some example that people would relate to in the world. So he's using like this. And then Srila Prabhupada's also making a point here, is that whenever the Lord comes, he has a particular thing that he's doing. So he takes a particular form with a particular mission. So in reading about this, I was thinking about the incarnation of Krishna, particularly. Like, we can think about how Ram comes to kill Ravana, right? Or Varaha comes to lift up the earth, or Matsya comes to save the Vedas in the flood, the Singhadev comes to kill the child abuser and rescue his... Well, Hiranyakashipu is our first child abuser in the universe, trying to kill his own child, torture his own child in many ways. The Singhadev is like mascot, but it's like, you know, the personal emblem of child protection. Vamandev comes to restore the universe to the devas. But what exactly does Krishna come to do? I mean, you can say he kills demons. You know, he destroys so many of the demons, he reestablishes righteous government. Like he says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bhavata bhutana madharmasya tadatmanam srujamyam. Parichranaya sadhanam vinashaya tadushkritam dharmastam sapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Every incarnation does that in some form. But I thought what's really amazing about the incarnation of Krishna, which doesn't really apply so much to the other incarnations, is that he's showing the ultimate activities of the spiritual world. I mean, you could say that's a function, but it's a little different category of function. It's not exactly like doing some job in the world. Yes? You know, like in any organization, sometimes the managers have to go into different rooms in the organization and make sure things are working. Yes? We were just talking about that. You may have to go in the room. Oh, the door doesn't close. The toilet doesn't flush. You know, and you have to go into different parts and you have some function, you have some reason that you're going there. You're going to check on the electricity. You're going to check on this. You're managing this. You're managing that. So Krishna comes into the world, or he sends his devotees. You know, take care of this thing. Because this is also his kingdom. Yeah. But when Krishna's coming as Krishna, like just dancing with the gopis, in what category is that? Eating lunch with the cowherd boys. You know, that's not like fixing something in the world. Do you follow? It's not like you call the boss and you say, you know, the pipe's leaking, come and fix it. And he comes and fix it. Or, you know, I've got somebody with a gun at my door, come and arrest him. You know, that's the kind of work these incarnations do. All right, I guess this has to be done by God. I guess I need to go do this. And of course, he's also having fun. I mean, it must be a lot of fun to be this gigantic boar flying through the sky, jumping into the Garbhodak ocean. And you know, when he does that, and he picks up the earth, who's his wife, he impregnates her. So he's definitely having fun here, and he's having fun, you know, fighting with the demon Hiranyaka, who had knocked the earth into the water. Prabhupada says in another place, I think in the second canto, in scheduled incarnations with specific functions, that the earth had fallen into the water because of people drilling for oil. And he definitely had fun playing with Hiranyaka. I mean, that's such a wonderful, wonderful pastime. You know, where at one point Hiranyaka knocks Varaha's club down. And then, you know, Hiranyaka doesn't want to fight with a club when the Lord doesn't have a club. Because he's respecting the laws of combat, even though he's a demon. So I'm sure that really, that was also a lot of fun. And finally, you know, killing the demon with just like a little kick after all that big battle. Yeah. So he's always having fun. I'm sure Nrsingadev has fun. It must be fun jumping out of a pillar. I mean, it must be a lot of fun with this terrible demon, Hiranyakashipu, who thinks he's got everything sewn up, you know? Okay, I can't be killed in the inside or the outside. Well, that's everything. There's nothing that's not inside or outside, right? Can't be killed in the day or night. That covers, you know, all places, inside and outside. Covers all time, day and night. Not by any living entity created by Lord Brahma. Not by any weapon. Right? What were the other ones? Some other one. Land, sea, or sky.
Not day, not night.
And day, not night. Were there some more?
Not on the earth, not on the sky.
Not on the earth, not in the sky, yeah.
Not inside or outside.
All right, so not day or night, not inside or outside, not in the earth, not in the sky, not by any being created by Brahma, not by any object. No weapon. So no living being, no object. No place, no time. Okay, got it done. There's actually a Shakespeare play like that. Do you know what the Shakespeare play like that is? Where the demon thinks he has a solid benediction? That's Macbeth. Where Macbeth, he got his benediction from witches. They said, you cannot be killed by anyone born of a woman. All right. I'm safe, you know. And you can't be killed until the forest comes to your castle. And there was one more, I can't remember what it was. So he thought he was safe. And he went on a murder spree to become the king. And then, you know, the opposing army, to camouflage themselves, they were carrying tree branches. And so his aide comes in and says, Macbeth, Macbeth, the forest is coming to our castle. How is the forest walking? And he's like, oops. One benediction down. Then he's fighting with Macduff, and he says, I cannot be killed by anyone born from a woman. And he said, I was from my mother's womb untimely ripped. Kills him. So Hiranyakashipu also thought like this. I've got it sewn up, you know. It must have been a lot of fun for Nrsingadev to jump out of the pillar and go, got ya. It wasn't on the inside or outside. It was in the doorway. It wasn't in day or night. It was twilight. It wasn't on the land or the sea or the sky. It was on my lap. It wasn't by any being created by Lord Brahma, because I wasn't created by Lord Brahma, and it wasn't by any object or weapon, it was by my nails. Nothing living or not living, he also said. Nothing living, nothing. Nails are alive and dead, both. Yeah, he must have really had a lot of fun. Like, found all the loopholes in this, and it's got you.
They say that he also asked not the 12 months of the year, and he was played on the push
of the month. Oh, really? That's funny. I have never heard that one before. Yeah. So in other words, Hiranyakashipu was also having fun. It said Nrsingadev was laughing. He's laughing. And actually Hiranyakashipu was like, I don't want to hear the laughing. He's covering his ears, trying to run away from the laughing. And Nrsingadev was just laughing. Actually, Lord Kapiladev said we should meditate on the laughter of the Lord. I'm sure Vamadeva was having a lot of fun. He just looks like this little boy. I just want three steps of land. As I measure them. And Bali's saying, you're not very intelligent. Right? And then he's like, well, actually, my form is kind of interesting here. And he has this unlimited form. And all of a sudden, Vamadeva has this form of the universe. The class I was going to give today had a lot of those verses. So he has the whole form of the universe. And he's like, I took the universe from you in two steps, Bali. Now what are you going to do? So that's fun. But Krishna is especially having fun that's just fun. Like all these other incarnations, they're having fun in the context of them doing their duties. You know, like So you're getting the toilet to flush in the ladies' bathroom, and maybe you're singing while you're doing it. And so you're also having fun doing it. But it's not pure fun. You follow what I'm saying? Yeah? But Krishna has pure fun. Prabhupada talks about one of his godbrothers who was German, who came to India, and he was looking for God, and he sees that all the demigods, they all have something to do. But Krishna's just flute playing. He's just dancing and flute playing. And actually Krishna explains to Arjuna, he says, if you understand that I have nothing to do, but still I do things for the sake of the world, then you also can be detached from your work. You also can work in a transcendental consciousness. And this fact that Krishna is just playful is very bewildering, even to the demigods. Like when Krishna is just sitting eating with the cowherd boys, and they say, you know, hey, would you like the samosa? And they just throw it to him. We don't make offerings like that to the deities, right? We don't just throw samosas at, you know, hey, Jagannath, take the samosa, you know. And then he had to manifest some hands and grabs it. But they do that. They just, you know. And sometimes when they get Krishna to get distracted, they'll say, hey, there's a monkey. And Krishna looks to see the monkey. And while he's looking, they take his samosa and they take all the veggies out of it and they put jasmine flowers in it. And then Krishna goes to eat it and they're like, what is this? And they're all laughing. And they're fighting. You know, they're having wrestling. And sometimes Krishna's team loses. Like with the Pralamba pastime, sometimes Krishna's team loses. And so, you know, Lord Brahma's looking at this and he's like, it's just a little boy. It's just a little boy acting like a little boy. How is it, you know? I don't think he's Vishnu. Let me just check it out. You know, what does he do if I take away all his friends and calves? I'll just take him away for a minute. I'll just move it for a minute. Like a child's playing with a toy and you just put it behind your back for a minute, you know, and then take it out again. So he thought, I'll just put it there for a minute. It was one of Lord Brahma's minutes. And then, of course, Krishna expands as the cowherd boys and the calves for a year of earth time. And when Lord Brahma comes back, he's like, wait a minute. I put the boys in a cave and they're here. And how can there be two sets? Because every jiva is unique. There cannot be two living entities exactly the same. Each one of us is unique. Krishna is a real variety person. And Lord Brahma is completely bewildered. How is it he's God and he's just having fun? He's not accomplishing some purpose, some mission in a sense. So the function, because Prabhupada said every incarnation has some function, but the function of Krishna is to show us that the ultimate reality is just play. Many years ago, it was in Australia, actually, somebody was running a Sunday school for kids, devotional Sunday school for kids, and she said like this, how do I make Krishna consciousness fun for the children? And I said, well, if you're conscious of Krishna, you're going to be having fun. I said, if you're not having fun, I don't know who you're conscious of, but it isn't Krishna. Even all these various incarnations are always having fun. For them, it's play. They have a function, but it's not work. The concept of work is actually a materialistic idea formed in illusion. Thinking that I'm lacking something and therefore I have to work for my necessities of life. That's a condition that comes to us with the modes of material nature. We'll talk about this somewhat this afternoon. We're supposed to work above the modes of nature. We're supposed to do our work as play, as part of Krishna's adventure. Like one devotee told me the other day, she said, I've replaced worry with curiosity. What's going to happen next? How is Krishna going to deal with this situation? Krishna likes saving his devotees at the last minute. He likes that. You know, all the cowherd boys are in Agasura, and he likes saving them in some amazing way. Okay, how do I kill Agasura and not kill the boys that are inside Agasura? Let me go inside. And the demigods are all, And then Krishna just makes a hole in the guy's head. And gets all the cowherd boys safe. Or Govardhan Puja always amazes me. Like if there's a flood. So some years ago, right, there was a flood in Marillabar, right? Really severe flood. Would anyone think of picking up a mountain as a way to deal with that? And Krishna's like, oh, it's flooding. It's really raining. Let me hold up the mountain. He's having fun. So our lives should be like that. Our lives should be an adventure. That's the way we are meant to live. We are Anandamaya Vyasat. We are pleasure-seeking. If we don't find that pleasure in Krishna, we're going to look for it in Krishna's shadow. Shasti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Rekha Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vivarti Durga Ichchana Rupa Vyasya Tatesa. It's a chaya. It's a shadow. A shadow exists, but it's not the thing. You follow? You can't say it's false. There is a shadow, but it's not the thing. And we'll look for our happiness in the shadow, where we experience death and suffering and all kinds of tribulations. Instead, we should look for our happiness in the reality. And we're so fortunate that when we're told to always think of Krishna, we have so many unlimited incarnations and pastimes to think about. It's not some vague thing, like if someone says you should love God, but you don't know who God is. You don't know anything about him. Like I've given this example, you know, the girl comes home, young girl comes home to her parents. I'm in love with boy. Oh, what's his name? I don't know. What does he look like? I don't know. What does he do? I don't know. Where does he live? I don't know. But I love him. How are you going to love God without any information of God? But can we love Varaha? Is he lovable? He's definitely lovable. He's beautiful. Even though he has this sokaram vapu, normally we don't think of pigs as very beautiful, right? But he's so beautiful. His skin is made of the Vedic hymns. Actually, whenever we're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra or any Vedic hymns, we're touching this skin. It's beautiful, shining tusks, and he's effulgent. And when he's making whatever kind of roaring noise he makes, it's actually this, it's beautiful music, the sound of the Vedas. And he cares so much about our little planet. Is this a very little planet? Is this planet kind of insignificant in the universe? Yeah. I mean, it's really insignificant. Those who live in other parts of the universe, they probably hardly see us in their night sky. They probably have to get a really big telescope just to even know that we exist. I bet you we're not really very visible, huh? If you go to Alpha Centauri, probably you can't even see us. A speck in the Milky Way. And we're all so tiny, right? You've all been in an airplane, I assume. You have to get really close to the ground before you can see people. You can see cars. But people? Nah, you have to be almost landed. We're so tiny. And yet he cares about us so much that he takes this boar form and he dives in the water and he picks up our planet. Oops. Gotta save you. Gotta take care of you. How could we not love him? And he fights with the demon to protect us. Lord Varaha is the ultimate environmentalist. And he really cares about the planet. Cares about protecting it from demoniac beings who want to shake up its ecosystem and shake up its balance. So how can we not love him? And any form of the Lord that we meditate on, we can actually become attracted, not just to some theoretical idea, but actually become attracted and want to serve him out of this deep attraction. So thank you very much. Sorry we didn't get to give the presentation we had planned, but I guess Krishna wanted. And thank you for suggesting this verse. I really, really like Varaha. One of the reasons I really, really like Varaha is when I was very new in the Hare Krishna movement. I mean, I'm still just a beginning devotee, but when I was very young as far as being in the movement. So I was reading the Bhagavatam in order. You know, like I was told, you have to start at the beginning and go through it. Anyway, we didn't have that much of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada was translating it as I was reading it. So, of course, the first canto was a lot about the Pandavas and stuff. But I wasn't, having not been brought up in this culture, I really didn't know who these people were. Like, I was trying to learn who they were, who's Duryodhana and Bhishma. And then the second canto was very philosophical. Like, very, 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 very philosophical. And I was dutifully reading it, and then I come to Varaha. And I'm like, whoa. And I just remember coming to the main, I mean, this is just one verse here about Varaha, but coming to the whole Varaha pastimes, and I basically stayed up all night just reading and reading about Varaha. And so it was a source of great joy. Also, the devotees had done some recordings for a radio show in Los Angeles. I don't know if any of you have heard this. It was only a few. There were three cassette tapes, I remember. Any of you have any idea what a cassette tape is? But one of the stories they did was of Lord Varaha. And we didn't have a whole lot to listen to in the early days of the movement. You know, we had some few recordings of Prabhupada singing. We had George Harrison's album. You know, very, very little. But we had these, and then we had Prabhupada's lectures that were gradually coming out. You know, you'd get copies of them in the mail as he was lecturing. But we had these recordings of Leela done by the devotees in Los Angeles. I don't remember how many stories there were, not that many, maybe nine. And one of them was the story of Varaha. So it was something that I listened to, you know, while I was making garlands or working the temple over and over and over and over again. All right, so I think we'll stop here if there's questions or comments or. And then if you're interested in our Career Dharma book, we are going to be teaching that tonight. If any of you would like to take a look at it before, you won't be able to read the whole thing, I don't think, before tonight's class. But perhaps you could at least take a look at it and read some of it before the class tonight. Yes, Prabhu.
First of all, it's my responsibility to have that table here, so I could hear.
Wasn't what Krishna wanted people to hear today.
My question is, you made a very early point, the services has to be fun because we are serving Krishna fun. But sometimes fun, we don't want to water down the philosophy just for the sake of fun and making it. We still have to be regulating and we have to be very strict with our duties and responsibilities. And how to balance it with the fun.
Okay, bringing in fun isn't washing down the philosophy, it is the philosophy. Bhagavad Gita 1876. O King, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure being thrilled at every moment. Prabhupada's purport. The understanding of Bhagavad Gita is so transcendental that anyone who becomes conversant with the topics of Arjuna and Krishna becomes righteous and he cannot forget such talks. This is the transcendental position of spiritual life. In other words, one who hears the Gita from the right source, directly from Krishna, attains full Krishna consciousness. The result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill, not only for some time, but at every moment. So if we are not enjoying life with a thrill at every moment, we are not in Krishna consciousness. Full stop. That doesn't mean we become irresponsible children. Arjuna didn't become an irresponsible child. Is that right? How to do that? So that we'll be discussing tonight. How to do that. Part of it is being in your right place. Part of the reason we don't find our work to be play is we're doing someone else's work. Now, every once in a while we have to do someone else's work because there's an emergency. But part of the reason we don't feel playful is that we're doing someone else's work. Another reason we don't feel playful is we haven't learned how to do our own work in Krishna consciousness. And particularly if we're covered by the gunas. So nothing seems playful in the gunas. If you're in tamagun, Krishna says in tamagun it's all misery. In rajagun there's a little sense pleasure here and there. But it's mostly hard work and sacrifice and duty. Rajagun is really about being dutiful and doing what you're supposed to do because you're a righteous person and forcing yourself to do things and forcing others. And sattvagun is about going with the flow and being in harmony. And sattvagun, there's some sense of happiness. If there's any material happiness at all, it's in sattva. But only bhakti is playful. So if we're not feeling playful, we're being conditioned by one of the gunas. So we have some slides this afternoon that if you think about life as a river, if you think about life or truth as a river. So I had a lot of friends help me with this. Each one has a P word and each one has an F word. So you can remember that. Okay, so if you think of life as a river, in tamagun, you pollute and foul the river of life. In rajas, you're pushing and forcing the river of life, like you're building big dams and things. In sattva, you plunge into the river of life and you flow into it. And in bhakti, you play and frolic in the river of life. The research shows that we learn more when we're having fun. That if you're trying to learn under pressure, you may be able to memorize things in order to pass an exam, and then after the exam, it's all gone. But the more play and fun you're having when you're learning, the more likely you are to learn. Now, there's a biological reason for that. When we're playing, our body understands that we're safe. The brain understands when you're playful. The brain thinks, oh, I'm safe, because nobody plays when they're in danger. And when you're safe, all of your body's at optimal functioning. Your digestion works really well, your immune system's working really well, and all your higher order brain functions are at their peak capacity. When we feel in danger, our digestion pauses, our immune system goes on pause, our higher order thinking skills go on pause, and our amygdala is just sending cortisol and adrenaline. Run away from the tiger. Deal with the insult. And if we stay in a state like that, it produces all sorts of disease. Physical and sometimes mental. Also, unless you're trying to run away from tigers, your body is functioning most efficiently. Your body and mind is functioning at peak efficiency when you're in a mood of playfulness and a mood of joyfulness. And yes, you can even clean bathrooms like that. You can think, I'm providing the facility for the devotees. How wonderful I am. Wonderful of a service that I get to have. And you can be meditating on the pastimes of the Lord where the devotees are facilitating the service not only of Krishna but of the other devotees. You can meditate on how Shiva Amar said this in Hungary, how the deities aren't just sitting on the altar, they're getting around, they're walking around the property regularly. I should tell you this story. So in the old 50-50 temple in New York, we were all very young, okay? So just keep that in mind. I don't know if there was anybody there over the age of 26, you know, we were all young. And there would be somewhere between 300 to 700 people in every kirtan. The building would hold about 300 people, and we were about in Midtown Manhattan, and we had huge, you couldn't even tell sometimes if people lived there because they were there for every kirtan. So sometimes for the group, we do kirtan. The kirtan would get so enthusiastic that it wouldn't end and there was no class that day. And one day, the kirtan leader decided to take the kirtan out of the temple room. So there was a downstairs where we had a restaurant that seated 150 people and a bakery. And then first floor was like a reception area. And then there were 11 stories. And then there was a rooftop garden. And the kirtan leader took the kirtan out of the temple room downstairs. And the devotees started grabbing the pots and pans out of the kitchen and banging them like instruments, you know. And then he took the kirtan party up through all of the floors. There was like the theater floor, and we had a professional theater there, and prasadam room, and then there was back to Godhead and BBT floor, and then there was a couple floors for the brahmacharis, and a floor for the brahmacharinis, a floor for the grihasthas without kids, a floor for the grihasthas with children. Then there was a life membership floor in Prabhupada's quarters, and they took the kirtan all the way through the building. As I said, we had no Bhagavatam class that day. So it happened one time, and then one day it happened again. And every once in a while, just spontaneously, right, that we'd have this happen. And Tamal Krishnaraj was our GBC, and he noticed this one time, and he said, we should actually do this every Monday. He said, every Monday we should have a kirtan going through the building and take the little deities in a palanquin around the whole property. So they took the little deities in a palanquin with this wild kirtan going, well, wow, if the deities are going to show up, I better clean. Because they were going to come by your room, you know, and your floor. So I don't know if Tamal Krishnaraj planned that or not, but it ended up resulting in a maha cleanup of the whole temple. And, you know, we would stand by our... Then, like, the next time it happened, someone had the idea to stand by their door with, like, flowers or sweets or incense, and then it became a competition. You know, and we'd go with the kirtan, and when it came to our floor, we'd run to our room and open our door and have something ready as an offering. And then one time, one of the floors, I can't remember who started it, decided they were going to have a special offering on their floor. And so when the deities arrived on their floor, they like chanted the whole Brahma Samhita or something. And then the other floors were like, whoa, okay, it's on, you know. And so at each floor then, we'd do a little drama or we'd say verses. Or one time I went to the local park and collected all these leaves and flowers and we decorated the whole thing. You know? But even if you don't do that, even if you don't physically take the deities around the property, they're going anyway. They're definitely, you know, checking in every corner and looking at the accounting books and looking at the this and the that. So, yeah, one can do this. Is that all right? And when we were having, we were having fun. Okay, that was like fun. That was max fun. But we worked really hard. Yeah, I mean, we cleaned every corner and decorated everything. It wasn't that we weren't working hard, but we were having a blast. If someone had said, this is hard work, we'd go, what? That's not hard work, it's fun. All right, I think we should stop now because it's time for breakfast. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.